77, Senator Howe. Welcome to the committee, Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Senate File 477 is a bill related to food inspections, and it modifies and exempts certain organizations from inspections, and it does require them to do have some educational process. And it's not in its final form. We'd like to have it included in the omnibus bill, laid over and included for possible inclusion. We are still working with the health department to make some more modifications. But before I get started, I'd like to offer a delete all amendment, an author's amendment. I don't know what council wants to call this amendment, because it still has the House file number on it, but it's the delete all. Maybe I can get Senator Benson to offer that for me.
I would be happy to move the E4 amendment, looks like, the delete all amendment.
And Senator Benson, and just clarification from Senate Council, do we need to make adjustment on line 1.1 to say Senate File 477?
77.
Otherwise, is the language written conforming to the
It's Senate a delete file? Everything, so.
Oh, it's delete everything. Great. All right.
Mr. Senator, Chair?
Senator Higgins.
Are we really going to offer a House file?
We're changing.
Bad form here to have a.
We're changing it to say Senate File 477. We could have typed in Senate File 477 and recopied all of these, but I thought maybe it would be nice.
We're saving trees today.
Trees. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, I apologize. It should have been in a proper form, and it's my responsibility. My LA made the photocopies, and it still had the House file number on it, so I apologize. And I'm the same way. I couldn't throw them away.
Save a tree.
All right. Senator Benson moves. I don't know if there's an amendment number on this. Is it
E4? It starts with an H.
Senator Benson moves the DE4 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I should say no just on principle.
All right. Duly noted. Senator Howe, now the bill is in front of you as you wish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. How this was initiated is Goodhue County recently relinquished its food inspection programs for nonprofits. They focused on businesses yet, but and restaurants, but they relinquished their responsibility to the state in a cost-saving measure. And what happened was the state inspectors would run into a little difficulties at various church organizations where they didn't either have the proper equipment or the food wasn't being served in the proper manner to meet with state code. And potluck dinners and church organizations is a big part of our fabric of life down in Goodhue County. And so this bill moves to make some changes to that, and like I said, we continue to work with the health department to modify it to get it in its proper form. But with me today, I've got a couple of testifiers, Pat Eartham and Kathy Teal, and so I'd like them to testify if I could.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Chairman and committee, I'm Pat Eartham from Wanamingo, Minnesota, representing the churches in Goodhue County. My son and I have a dairy farm in the Wanamingo area. What does this have to do with the health inspectors? We are familiar with inspectors on our dairy farm. We know that every 5 to 6 months we're going to see an inspector. We know that as dairy farmers. We know what they're going to be looking for. However, on the morning of March 16th, 2010, at the St. Paul's Church in Zebrota, Minnesota, without any notification to any of the churches in the county, we were visited by a food inspector that morning who laid all these rules on the table the morning of our dinner. with a statement saying she could shut us down. She happened to be driving through Wanamingo, or through Zambrota. She also noticed another church sign advertising a Mother's Day brunch. They were also approached the same way as we were. I learned later that the city administrator from Wanamingo had also dealt with the same individual on a sit-and-my pancake breakfast in Wanamingo. I contacted Mike Bolton, our city administrator, and realized we were facing the same problem, so we began working on this program. In August of 2010, Mr. Bolton set up a meeting in Wanamingo with three of the people from the Minnesota Health Department. They expected six or eight people, but because the word spread through Goodyear County like wildfire after what happened at St. Paul's, there were 75 people showed up by word of mouth. That's the only way this word was spread. The three people walked into the room and backed out, then came back and divided us into three groups. They later brought us together, and Mr. Bolton said, you gave these people conflicting information. The people left the meeting that night more confused than they were when they arrived because they were getting conflicting answers. After that, Kathy Teal and I worked on a resolution and presented it to the churches, and we had 400 signatures. We probably could have gotten a lot more had we worked on it harder, and these were sent to Representative Druskowski's office, and the resolution also appears as part of the Minnesota Farmers Union policy. This hit the news, Republican Eagle on state inspectors calling for last potluck supper, churches facing state regulation after county ends inspection. Rochester Post Bulletin, February 22nd, food fight breaks out between state inspectors. Bill seeks to halt state health inspections of church dinners. It also appeared in the Agri News. Canyon Leader and also the Faribault paper, praying for supper, area church ladies prompt legislation. These are what hit the media. We were also told we need a $90 license to cover three church events. Later found out that this was not true. But today there's still a lot of misinformation. Just last Tuesday, I was told by four people from a local church that they had applied and gotten a $90 permit license for three events in their church. I began to wonder who they were talking to. I called the church secretary, and she advised me to call an individual who was delegated for this job. I called her, and she told me that this was not true because she was told it was not necessary. I said, hooray, the word is getting out there. We need this matter cleared up for Goodyear County. Many of these churches are also facing financial problems, and it's a very important part of rural Minnesota. We need to exempt churches out of the food stand regulation and educate but not regulate. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Howe, a while back, former Representative Al Junkie had what at the time was deemed the it earned the moniker the hot dish bill.
Yeah. That's
bill.
Great.
Exactly. Yes.
How is this different? Do you know?
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair and Senator Mino, I'd have to defer to the State Health Department on that if they'd answer that question. Maybe we can, I know they'll be testifying, we can maybe answer that question then.
Mr. Chair.
We call this our church ladies' bill.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino, I think the potluck bill is starting on line 2.14, that paragraph right there. Mr. Chair, I do have a question.
Senator Higgins.
On starting on lines 2.34, so that paragraph, saying that fundraisers and festivals and other things owned in or conducted in a building of a faith-based organization or a building owned or leased by the local unit of government, except for schools, can have a volunteer food manager or something. That would mean that the Target Center, the Target Field, the Metrodome, the Convention Center, the Excel Center, the Deck in Duluth, St. Cloud Civic Center, the Rochester Civic Center, all of those places could, somebody could say that they're going to bring in a volunteer place, organization, person to do the food there. And I sincerely hope we do not do that. That part is way overbroad. And you've pulled in some entities that you don't want to have volunteer. We have professional union, many cases, union staff that do this.
Senator Howland, any comment on
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins. That, I think you've zeroed in on exactly one of the things we're talking with the State Health Department about, is exactly that issue. We do not want to exempt those organizations or those places, so we are going to correct that.
Well, let's, before it leaves this hearing, let's correct it. Maybe our good counsel can come up with something.
And Senator Higgins and Senator Howe, I it might be helpful to have some testimony. You'd mentioned that there are some issues with the bill. And it would certainly be my preference to not send this bill from committee if it still has issues that pertain to policy that this committee has jurisdiction over. Is that possible?
I would defer to the chair on that. I know it's going to be included in the House Omnibus Bill, and I know we're having a meeting on Tuesday to discuss to work out some details on this bill with the State Health Department, Representative Drakowski and myself. I'd prefer if we would finish our testimony since we're here, we'll hear from the Health Department. Would that be okay, Senator Higgins?
Senator Higgins.
Not my choice, but that would be fine. I was just wondering whether if it made deadline in the House, we've got all next week to work on it.
Senator Higgins, that's a good point. If this has made the deadline in the other body, we certainly do not have to try to get it all sorted out today.
Well, it is my, Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, it is my belief that it is going to be in the House Omnibus Bill. I'm not positive on that.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, just because something's in a House Omnibus Bill doesn't mean it has to be in a Senate Omnibus Bill. The Senate can have a position on an issue by passing it as a separate bill, and it can still be conferenced in a conference committee.
And Senator Berglund, that's correct. And I do want to do what we can to correct or deal with any of the issues that might be in the bill. But let's continue with the testimony and see where we get.
Mr. Chair, I would have Kathy Teal speak then.
Mr. Chair, well, committee members.
Please state your name for the record.
Kathy Teal, Wanamingo, Minnesota.
Thank you.
It was brought to our attention that church dinners were considered food stands after what Pat just talked about in our visit. So I researched the food stand bill. Any dinner where the public is invited, other than funerals and church, can no longer go upon their regular way we've done things over the years unless we paid the fee and followed all the rules of this. Many years ago, I went to the Conception Church dinners for years where my grandma, Maggie O'Flaherty McNallen, ran the pie room. This is part of our heritage. These pies weren't baked in the church basement that morning because everything else was being prepared. We made them at home. If I'm going to take all of the goods to make my pie to the church basement and I prepare it and I put it in that oven, it doesn't make it any safer than if I put it in my oven at home and bring the pie from home. It all comes down to where I got these products. Now, last year when we all were contaminated with such terrible food poisoning out of packaged spinach, and those were bought at grocery stores and all over, and they were from a factory that is inspected on a regular basis. We can't throw out food poisoning. I mean, it's a terrible thing. I feel bad for anyone that has it. But I feel like the baby is being thrown out with the bathwater here, where we stop church dinners just because we're worried about food poisoning. Church dinners are important for heritage and being Minnesotan. It's done as a fundraiser to keep our small rural churches going. Steve Swigum's church with the big lutefisk dinner that they come in from busloads from St. Paul That church couldn't stay open without church dinners. And it's not just the money, it's the community acceptance. It's a way of life in rural Minnesota, and we need not, I don't think we should be changing that tradition. Stop food poisoning, I'm all for that. I'm all for us being educated by the food safety program that's offered through the Extension Office to have various members of our church attend that, and we try our very best. Our church does have a commercial dishwasher. We have taken as many precautions as we can to keep it healthy. But again, where I cook my pie doesn't guarantee that we'll never have food poisoning at that dinner. Allowing church dinners to continue for future generations is just important in Minnesota. It's as important as Ufta or Ole and Sven or Lutefisk dinners, whether it's ham or Lutefisk. It's still an important tradition. I just feel very strongly that we should not throw out church dinners just because we're worried of food poisoning.
Thank you, Ms. Teal. Other questions? Senator Higgins.
It's not a question, Mr. Chair, but I've been looking at that section at 2.34, and I think I can get Target Field and Target Center and all of those organizations out of this. Let me throw it out to you and see if you think it's worthwhile. I think it is. On line 2.34, delete the first comma and insert and. Delete the second comma or other events. On line 2.35, delete everything after the word organization. And on line 2.36, delete everything before the comma. So it would read, fundraisers and community festivals conducted in the building or on the grounds of a faith-based organization, comma, provided that a certified, and then the rest of the sentence.
Okay.
So that would still allow the community festivals, the fundraisers, at the faith-based organizations. It would keep the public buildings out of it.
And Senator Higgins, I had the same thought. I'm not certain if there may be other objections that the Department of Health may have. So I would.
It's time to have them come say hello to
us. I would like to. And so rather than taking up your amendment right now, let's hold off on that and see if there are concerns that the Health Department has that would not be addressed by your suggestion. Okay. Senator Howe, did you have other testifiers?
No, I'll have some closing remarks, but that's it for our testifiers.
Okay. And if that's the case, are there other testifiers on this bill? Or I'm hoping there'd be someone from the Department of Health who might be here to explain concerns that they may have.
Religious worship or education, so the religious church or school. It could be red.
It's not she has, so it's like
just under
welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Colleen Paulus. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Health. I'm the manager of the Food, Beverage, and Lodging Program. In addition to that, this statute that's being modified, it also covers and regulates lodging establishments, swimming pools, youth camps, so it's a broad statute. And so when we modify it and we create exemptions, we want to make sure that we're not having unintended consequences. And this bill at this point does have some unintended consequences. We do believe that good public health policy is to assist communities in providing safe food to residents and visitors. And we all enjoy community festivals and church events are very important to the community. And we believe that they can occur in a safe and healthy manner through education and regulation. And public health is about prevention and interventions and using the knowledge gained over the years to protect public health. This bill, as it's written, doesn't prevent disease. And since the year 2000, there have been at least 22 outbreaks associated with church meals, school concession stands, American Legions, And they've been in locations that have been exempted from inspections, such as what this bill would allow. And because this bill has such a broad, cast such a broad net, we would be seeing children going to youth camps that would no longer be inspected to ensure that there'd be safe food and lodging. It sounds like there is a recommendation to delete the language for the local units of government so that we wouldn't have tens of thousands of people attending sports events that would be exposed to unknown food sources, or visitors coming to conventions that would have unregulated food and lodging. And nationwide right now, we do have an epidemic of bed bugs, and this bill would prevent or allow for an exemption for certain Minnesota lodging facilities.
Before you continue, just I wanted to clarify that. How would, if the language is, and I'm going to use the language that Senator Higgins has suggested change to say fundraisers and community festivals conducted in the building or on the grounds of a faith-based organization, how does that apply to camps? How does it apply to other entities that aren't specified in that language?
Well, sometimes in terms of community festivals, we do have situations where lodging is provided. It could either be in tents, it could be in, such as at the state fair, there's the 4-H building.
Is the state fair considered a community festival?
It could be, and that's what we're working out with the state fair. But, and I know that in talking with the state fair, the state health department and the state fair are committed to providing safe food and lodging. I mean, that is such a tremendous opportunity. It is the Minnesota great get-together. Yeah,
stipulate for sake of discussion that the state fair might be considered a community festival, which I don't believe they would, and I think they're already complying with, for a variety of reasons, the things that you're indicating. Are there any other community festivals that would be providing lodging to people, or I'm just trying to understand if the language that Senator Higgins has proposed, if that were adopted, if that would restrict the scope of this bill to the purpose that the author is looking for.
Well, we do have larger community festivals. We Fest is a community festival. Moondance Jam is. It would really depend if it's located on the grounds of a faith-based organization. So it depends on how you define the faith-based organization. And because of the differences between the two bills, you have the original bill and this bill, we still have not worked out those differences, because what could happen is that a property could be owned by a faith-based organization and yet have these events. So those are the things we're trying to work out at this point in terms of, is this bill really being written for the intention of really exempting what we'd call in the very beginning of the delete all, where you have the, where it specifies the weddings, fellowship meals, funerals, and dinners. Those are currently exempted. We believe that they should still be exempted, their religious activities.
Senator Benson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was wondering if this applies to youth camps, say summer camps for church groups. There are lots of church groups, so would they be exempted from inspection by this?
No. Mr. Chair, Senator, if the language other events is taken out, then we don't believe that they would be exempted.
Which language?
They already
right.
Yes.
Yeah,
on
yeah,
it,
yeah.
So you've already taken it.
Well, that's what we're proposing, right?
And so, Ms. Paulus, as I understand it, then, if Senator Higgins' language were to be adopted as an amendment, then it would restrict it to the purposes of the author, with the possible exception of what the state fair may consider itself to be. Is that correct? Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, on the last page, there's a reference to this exemption does not apply to faith-based organizations that choose to apply for a license, which is very strange, for events. Do you or does somebody from the health department know whether the churches that have the food stands and such things at the state fair. Don't they have to have a license to do that?
Ms. Pauls?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, at the state fair we do currently license and inspect the church dining halls, and they do have to have a license. That's all part of it.
And
Senator Higgins.
And Mr. Chair, do they get to choose whether to apply for them? Don't they just have to have one?
Ms. Pauls.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that language was added as we were working with the with Representative Druskowski. We were being asked by at the department by churches to be licensed because of the different activities that they had. There has also been situations where I've had people call and say they disagree with the way the food has been handled. Would you please come in and help us? And so instead of having a complete exemption from those activities, the language was inserted for those organizations that would like to have the health department
so
come in.
So, Ms. Paul, so I understand that there are some churches or faith-based organizations that, are, while they may not be required, sometimes seek to be licensed, and the department complies with that request. Is that correct? And that this would continue to allow them to do that and not exempt them from the provisions in this bill. Is that?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is correct. We've had some situations where it's been, they've experienced some significant problems. And in fact, during the revision of this bill, we did have a situation where it was an unlicensed church meal that was opened up to the public. And unfortunately, there were 60% of the people who attended this meal became ill. 86 people were interviewed. 51 became ill with vomiting and diarrhea. 7 people were taken to the hospital. 4 people were taken by ambulance. 5 of the ill were hospitalized with an average of a 3-night stay. The length of illness was 68 hours. So we calculated out that with this one event, there were 3,468 healthy hours lost to the community, in addition to the medical expenses. So these situations, as much as we all want to have a good time, it still has that potential in terms of impacting our communities, and we want healthy communities.
Ms. Pauls, just so I understand, I'm not clear if your concern about the bill is the scope of the language that may include some things that ought not to be included, or is it just that you don't think that we ought to extend the exemption to organizations like this, period? Could you clarify your concern?
Mr. Chair, yes. We do believe that on lines 1.14 to 1.16 is acceptable language. We do have a little bit of concern about the word education.
Or such as? Or activities such as?
Such as.
You don't say it.
Mr. Chair, sorry, I'm muttering.
I anticipate that you might have a concern about that wordage. And if you have a suggestion, we'd be happy to.
Mr. Chair, the easiest thing would be to delete activities such as. If what Senator Howe would like to do is exempt weddings, fellowship meals, funerals, and dinners conducted by churches, then let's just say so rather than activities such as, because then who knows what that
sure.
might turn
sorry.
Out to be.
And Senator Howe, are you friendly to that amendment?
Yes, and also, Senator Higgins, Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, I think at line, if we want to do an all-inclusive amendment to it, at 3.5. Strike. 3.5 strike. Or insert right after volunteers before the period, serving prepackaged products.
Oh, I like that.
Okay, so Sir Higgins incorporates that into her amendment. I assume that would be acceptable if you do that.
I think that's a great amendment. Thank you.
And so the amendment, the oral amendment, would be on line 1.14 to strike activities such as. And then on line 3.5 before the period, insert serving prepackaged products. And before we take up that amendment, one other question on line 1.16,
yep.
The words or education.
Strike that.
And just 1 second, Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, I object to that addition to the amendment because the church that I attend has a school with a cafeteria. That school was constructed for the purpose of education.
Okay.
And I wouldn't want a church with a school to not be able to use a gymnasium or facility. I think that's probably the purpose of having more education in there. And so if we could clarify before we delete.
Mr. Chair?
Sarah Higgins.
Probably, because I misread that when I first saw it, because it would seem to bring in public schools then at that point. So possibly we could just put religious in front of education.
Yeah.
Just to clarify.
Well, what I'm trying to understand is, and I think, Senator Benson, what you're if a church or an organization uses a school building for services, a public school building, and then they had a funeral in that building and wanted to conduct this kind of a meal, then there would have to be some way, because as I read it, the language is to permit the certain things to happen when it's being done by a religious organization in a particular building, one of which might be a school building. Is that what the author's intent was?
You're correct, Mr.
And
Chair.
Ms. Paulus, is that problematic in your view, the way this is written?
That wouldn't say a school. It's just that you could have one.
In that school.
Right.
Mr. Chair, as long as we're reading it correctly, that it is for those weddings, the meals, the funerals, and the dinners.
Right.
That's what it would be.
And Ms. Paulus, as I read the language in that paragraph, that's what it seems to be saying. Weddings, funerals, fellowship meals, or dinners conducted by a faith-based organization sort of independently of what kind of building it's in.
Yes.
According to that list. And Senator Higgins.
One more question. What's the difference between a meal and a dinner? We have fellowship meals, and then we have dinners.
Mr. Chair.
And Senator Benson.
Breakfast.
So isn't a meal inclusive of a dinner?
Senator Benson.
I would think, yes, that meals would include dinner.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can we keep editing then, Mr. Chair?
Weddings, fellowship meals.
Or funerals.
Or funerals. And
delete
strike,
or dinners.
Strike comma or dinners from line 1.14. And try to make meals be more inclusive to include dinners as well as breakfasts and snacks and lunch. Senator Howe, is that?
It's fine. That's acceptable.
And Ms. Paulus, that's?
Yeah, we're talking about the dinners, yeah.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that would be acceptable.
Right. Okay. There may be some other things we want to deal with here, but let's see if we can at least take a step here and revisit the Senator Higgins has offered as an oral amendment, line 1.14, striking activities such as, and then comma or dinners, and then going to page.
And inserting the word or before funerals.
And I'm sorry, that's correct. Also striking the comma before funerals and inserting or. So the line would read, weddings, fellowship meals, or funerals conducted by a faith-based organization, et cetera. And then also as a part of that amendment on line 3.5, before the period, inserting serving prepackaged products. The members understand what the amendment is?
And then, Mr. Chair, the original amendment on 2.3, 4, 5, and 6.
Well, and Senator Higgins, I'm okay with including that, although I'm not clear if the department is perfectly satisfied with that. And I'd rather say let's do this first.
And then we'll work on the other one.
And then we'll take a look at that other piece, if that's all right with you. Senator Higgins, is that acceptable?
Sure.
Okay. So the amendment applies to language on lines 1.14 and 3.5 only. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. The Amendment is adopted. And now I'd like to look at that language on the bottom of page 2, starting at 2.34 and extending over the top of page 3. Is that language, as was originally suggested by Senator Higgins, striking the or other events and then the language following organization on 2.35 to the end of the sentence? What does that pass muster from the department standpoint?
Not the end of the sentence.
We want
it
just for food.
Mr. Chair, it's only striking from organization to the end of the line and then the beginning of line 2.36 up to the comma.
That's right. I'm sorry. I misstated that. You're correct. So striking the language 2.35 or in a building owned and leased or leased by a local unit of government excluding public schools, comma.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
I know that we're waiting on the department, but having grown up in a small town, I will, there are community centers and city halls where the fire department holds their pancake breakfast, or perhaps a church would host a larger event. And so I absolutely get the point about Target Center and the Metrodome, but I also come from a little different perspective in that sometimes local units of government buildings are used by churches, and I just want to be careful that's not lost. I'm fine if that's what we need to do to move this amendment forward, because I agree with the sentiments of the amendment, but I just don't want to lose that little towns of 300 people don't have a lot of options. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Then maybe we should come up with some language about town halls or, you know, something that makes it smaller. Mm-hmm. At this point, Mr. Chair, I'm thinking that we're really getting deep in the weeds here and possibly...
Senator Higgins, I'm wondering the same thing. I'm wondering if perhaps we want to lay this aside for a few minutes and let the author and the department convene somewhere offline and try to devise some appropriate language that would accomplish your purpose, if that's possible. Would that be...
That would be a subject, Mr. Chair.
Right, let's
thank you. And thank you, and Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for working with me on this. Thank you.
We'll take up this bill again when you are ready. Just let us know. We will take up Senate File 1212, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have before you today Senate File 1212, which will add two words to an existing definition of patient. Those two words are adult children. If you look at the bill on line 2.6, you'll see where it adds adult children. How this came about is I had a constituent in my district who her father has passed away. She has the same medical condition that her father had, but she is not allowed to access, or her doctor is allowed to access his medical records in helping with her condition, and she would like to be able to do that, and I'm sure along with many other people in Minnesota who are in similar situations. So that's why I have this legislation before us today.
So it seems very simple, Senator Brown. Any questions for Senator Brown on Senate File 1212? Just give us a moment here to read the bill.
With patient records.
Madam Chair?
Senator Higgins.
What's this in relationship to? I mean, the whole bill is just a bunch of definitions. It's hard to have any context.
It's the medical records.
Senator Higgins.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Ms. Kavanaugh can explain.
I think what it is.
I believe it's...
can make medical decision.
You're right. There's a lot of definitions.
It's all it is.
Ms. Kavanaugh?
Wider. It's... Well, now I'm questioning myself. Let me look it up. And make it because the patient, they're defining the patient as adult.
Katie.
Records, but... It's who can make decisions because...
Ms. White, I have an answer.
Points of writing or...
She's been looking at the statute.
Okay. Including health care.
It's not about making decisions. It's who can get it.
Let's lean over to Lee. You draw back up.
Senator Brooklyn.
With the bill.
Senator Brooklyn. Makes a motion to move that Senate file 1212. Be recommended to pass.
Madam Chair, it's related to the Minnesota Health Records Act.
No. Senator Higgins, do you need some more further clarification on that?
No.
It's the patient.
So
it's
somebody
the patient
else
health
can get
records.
Yep.
Right. It allows the adult children to get the records of a deceased patient. It was the adult children of that patient. It allows them to get that patient's records.
Okay. Thanks.
Senator Brooklyn renews her. Senator Lurie, do you have a question?
I mean, I hate to do this, but if we're expanding the group of individuals,
should go to judiciary.
Should go to that's able to gain access to patient records.
State of privacy
should go to judiciary.
Madam Chair, it has
Senator
been
Brown.
The chairman of judiciary has requested that move to his committee after it leaves.
Oh, it has.
Okay, there is a request
so
out. Okay.
Okay,
that's
good.
Fine.
Well, and then the motion.
Okay, super.
Recommended to pass and refer.
Senator Brooklyn moves that Senate File 1212 be recommended to pass and sent to judiciary. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you,
Senator
Brown.
Thank you.
Senator
Brown. I apologize. That was
Madam
my
Chair,
mistake.
No, and Senator Brown, I'd like to actually congratulate you. It's a little after 2. We started at 9:30. This is the first bill we've been able to pass today.
Oh.
Well, I was so happy to make the motion.
That's good. Thank you,
members. Thank you, Senator Brown. Senator Senjum. Well, that's all we can
do for all these people.
Senator Senjum, Senate File 1201.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, and I can almost assure Senator Lurie that you're probably not going to pass this one today.
And I moved to lay it on the table at this point.
Perhaps nor should you, but I do appreciate the opportunity.
Then I really want to lay it on the table.
No, I say that in the sense that this probably needs some further conversation, but for those that have been around for a while, this is the coming back of the mid-level dental practitioner legislation of a couple of years ago, and there does seem to be a need for some additional conversation about that. Over the last couple of years, the Board of Dentistry has spent some time developing policies and procedures, if you will, for implementation of this particular statute and practice within Minnesota. And it seems as though they've established that there probably does need to be, in certain areas, some level of further clarification, and particularly as it relates to how the so-called comprehensive exam and treatment plan related to patients is implemented within the spectrum of the legislation. So the Minnesota Dental Association has brought this bill to me again for further discussion and hopefully some further edification by the committee and through the process. And I will tell you that they have had conversations, a good many, I understand, and in some cases fairly recent, with the other side of this issue, and hopefully they will continue on through the rest of this session and even during the course of the interim. But it was felt that it would be valuable to present this to the committee and get a flavor, if you will, from the committee on any direction that you might want to provide. And if there is no direction, at least you will be updated as to what the issues are. So with that, let me present Mr. Dick Dirtz, who is the Executive Director of the Minnesota Dental Association.
Thank you, Senator Sundrum. Welcome, Mr. Dirtz. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dick Dirtz. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Dental Association. I'm just going to, Madam Chair and members, provide a quick summary of what is in the bill, and then Dr. Sled will present further on it. Sections 1 and Section 2 of the bill relate to the dental health professional shortage area aspect of the bill. One of the key goals of passing the dental therapist legislation was to improve dental access. And there are a number of practice settings identified in the bill for the dental therapist. One of those is in the dental health professional shortage area, but it does not stipulate that practicing in such a shortage area requires underserved individuals to be treated. And so one of the requirements that occurs for a dental therapist who might work in a private practice setting, that being that the dental therapist see 50% of their patients from the underserved community, would be applied to the dental health professional shortage area also to ensure dental access enhancement. Section 3 of the bill is technical and was really provided primarily by the revisor's office. There are two or three things in Section 4 of the bill. Subdivision 1 strikes the word master's degree and just says an advanced dental therapy education program. It is not anything that is critical to us, I would say quickly. It was just something that was put into the bill for consideration. Subdivision 2 relates to the scope of practice for an advanced dental therapist. You may recall that there are two levels of dental therapists, the dental therapist and the advanced dental therapist. One of the key positions that the Minnesota Dental Association had a couple of years ago is that the advanced dental therapists not provide diagnosis, and diagnosis is not here. But this is a clarification of the language in the scope of practice to create more clarity about the fact that diagnosis would not be part of the scope of practice for an advanced dental therapist. Subdivision 3 relates to the role of the dentist. Under the scope of practice, subdivision 2, it states that the dentist is to authorize an individualized treatment plan for a patient prior to the advanced dental therapist providing care. There has been difficulty on the Board of Dentistry's part in putting all these pieces together. So subdivision 3 it provides a further clarification of how that would work and what the intent of that language in subdivision 2 was by saying that the dentist, there's to be the individualized involvement with a patient as intended under the scope of practice is further elaborated here by saying that there would be an exam and diagnosis, individualized treatment plan, and informed consent provided by the dentist, and we do believe that that's a very workable thing for the advanced dental therapist. Similar language in an appropriate place on lines 4.412 through 4.15. And then lastly, subdivision 4 relates to the medications authority for an advanced dental therapist. And striking the word provide just makes that medications provision similar to the that of the dental therapist. So that's a quick outline of what's in the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Dirtz, any questions? Senator Sanchez?
Madam Chair, I also have with me Dr. Jamie Sled, right?
Yes.
Who would like to make some comments.
Welcome, Dr. Sled.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Dr. Jamie Sled. I am a past president of the Minnesota Dental Association. I am the chair of the Dental Therapy Task Force, and I'm also a member of the Dental Therapy Admissions Committee at the School of Dentistry. First and foremost, this is not about changing the legislation. The MDA continues to support that dental therapy legislation. We're only asking for clarification. We have provided you with two documents. One document is a letter dated January 11th to Representative Kim Norton, written by Dr. Joan Shepherd, who was the president of the Board of Dentistry at that time, The second document is titled Minnesota Board of Dentistry Statements Regarding the ADT, or the Advanced Dental Therapy, and that was written on December 3rd of 2010. It's important to recognize that the Board of Dentistry is asking for clarification and a legislative confirmation, and the Board or the Minnesota Dental Association supports them in their efforts. If you look at point 10 on the second document, the statements from the board, again, they're saying the board supports a modification to the dental therapy, advanced dental therapy legislation to accomplish the goal that they have stated in point 9. And again, this says the board supports a requirement in statute that a dentist perform a comprehensive exam on all patients prior to being treated by allied personnel. Now, we still believe that the advanced dental therapist and the dental therapist should provide appropriate emergency palliative care. And what this clarification is doing, it's not changing the scope of practice that was granted in the original legislation, including surgical procedures. It does not change that at all. The MDA has been accused of scare tactics. We've been accused of saying that it's not safe for a dental therapist to provide care when, of course, it can be safe when there's a clear knowledge and understanding of what is best for the patient. It's never been the understanding that the advanced dental therapist would be able to diagnose. It's not a part of their education. The advanced dental therapist can still perform all of the procedures that was in the original legislation without a dentist on site. And when the clarification is saying that the dentist must provide an exam, a diagnosis, and a treatment plan prior to restorative treatment, that dentist does not have to be in the office with the patient. It does not slow down the process. There are other means, other ways for the dentist to provide that care. It's been proven by the Safety Net Coalition that those means can be met. And when it is said that a dentist can't do this in a timely fashion, it's not accurate. They have shown us that it can be done. This does not impede the idea of progress, and it will not reduce access, or it will not raise the cost of services to provide care for the underserved individuals. It is still critical that a dentist be a part of the care for the patient. The dentist must provide the comprehensive examination and diagnosis and treatment plan. The proposed suggestions, also it's been implied that this will slow down the progress for these new graduates of the dental therapy program. It will not slow down or impede the care that these individuals will provide. And also, the advanced dental therapist is not graduating at this time. They're still in their educational process. We did sit down with the Safety Net Coalition to have a conversation, to have discussions, and we look forward to doing so again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Sled, appreciate that. Are there any questions for the two testifiers? I know we have some questions. No? Okay. Senator Sanjum?
Madam Chair, I suspect there are testimony to the contrary on this, so certainly hear that.
Is there a Ms. Candy Hazen? Yep. Like to come up? Welcome, Ms. Hazen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Candy Hazen. I am a dental hygienist practicing in Minnesota. I also represent the Minnesota Dental Hygienists Association today. It was a dental hygienist, Dr. Colleen Brickle, who's sitting behind me, who first envisioned this provider and through Metropolitan State University created the first program. I speak against Senate File 1201. Let me be clear, this is not about patient safety. I realize that Dr. Sled said that they also feel that way, and now that they've seen some of the qualifications of these practitioners, I think that they realize that they're very highly educated. But it is about fear. Organized dentistry in Minnesota and America are opposed to dental practitioners who could provide dental services without a dentist first performing an examination and diagnosis, not because this practitioner would provide treatment that was substandard. If this were true, we would be reading the studies that would bear this out, but because some fear they may lose patients to these providers, some fear they may lose money to these providers. It is a control issue and nothing more. Should Minnesota residents who are part of an underserved population continue to wait for needed dental care? If dentists were going to provide this care, why haven't they stepped up and done so, rather than proposing to gut the new practitioner before they have even begun to practice? In 2008, the American Dental Association itself printed an article by K.A. Bolin entitled Assessment of Treatment Provided by Dental Health Aid Therapists, or DHATs, in Alaska, a pilot study. I sent to Mr. Beers the copy so every member should have the actual study. I'll summarize it here. There were a group of dentists. There were DHATs under general supervision, which means they were practicing without a dentist being present, and DHATs practicing under direct supervision, meaning there was a dentist right on the premises. All of their work was evaluated and found to be equal. There was no difference under any of those practice settings between the dentists or the DHATs. More evidence was reported by the U.S. Government Accountability Office, who released a report last November entitled Oral Health, Efforts Underway to Improve Children's Access to Dental Services, but Sustained Attention Needed to Address Ongoing Concerns. In this report, they state, and I quote, mid-level dental providers are not widely licensed or certified to practice in the United States, just the Alaskan program in this one. In Minnesota. Other countries, which have used mid-level dental providers for many years, reported that these providers delivered quality care and increased children's access to dental services. Sorry. Because of the on-site supervision requirement for intermediate restorative procedures, they did not include the Minnesota Dental Therapist graduates from the University of Minnesota as mid-level providers in that report, only the advanced dental therapists. Where is the evidence that the public is at risk if a dentist doesn't perform an exam and diagnosis before an advanced dental therapist has provided treatment, as the statute is written? The need is great. The educational requirements are stringent. I invite you to read them if you have not done so yet. All we have heard is innuendo and general statements, and I ask again, where is the clinical evidence that these providers would not be able to do the diagnosis ahead of time, as they have been trained to do? They have actually been trained to diagnose, so that is inaccurate. Without proof from independent sources as to why the ADTs cannot provide treatment under general supervision with a collaborating dentist, I urge you to vote no to Senate File 1201. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Hazen. Ms. Hazen, do you have an estimate of how long it would take if you did follow the bill or the recommendations for a comprehensive exam or comprehensive treatment plan? Is there any estimate how
that would absolutely... by a dentist?
Right, by a dentist.
I couldn't comment on that.
Mm-hmm.
I would ask one of the educators in the program would be have a better idea. Thank you.
And Ms. Hazen, do you have... would you happen to know how many are going to be graduating?
Yes, there are seven graduates in the class from the Metropolitan State University, and I'm remembering nine from the University of Minnesota.
Would this bill then require them to do anything different as far as their...
yes, the not with their educational requirements, but they would not be allowed to provide any treatment until a dentist does a comprehensive exam,
mm-hmm.
which I heard there was a referral to emergency treatment, but this would not be allowed according to the bill because it says any treatment. And so this, in my opinion, would slow down the access to care for people when it's completely unnecessary. Dental therapists around the world are providing this treatment without dentists on the premises. very safely and competently. There are many studies that show this.
Thank you. Senator Berkley.
Madam Chair, you know, one of the reasons we created this level of licensure is because of access issues. And so to say you can't access this type of provider until you've seen a dentist, when the problem is you can't see a dentist to start with, creates a real chicken and egg problem here. And so I do consider this bill a major step backwards.
Senator Berglund, that's why I asked the question to debate you. I was just looking for this response from you.
You know, I've been trying to be really good here because I don't even understand why we're hearing a bill on deadline day that we're going to lay over. You know, we've got other bills we haven't acted on. You know, some of us have been very loyal, faithful members of this committee. It's Friday afternoon. You know, obviously now we have to hear from the other side because we heard from the first side, but, you know, really and truly, this is not the best use of our time. We could even be doing this next week.
Well, Senator Berglund, I appreciate that, but it is we do have some testifiers, and obviously it is an issue that has been brought up, so we'll get to the other. Thank you, Ms. Hazen. Mr. Watson, please. Welcome, Mr. Watson.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Watson. I'm the Director of Public Policy with the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers. We represent the federally qualified health centers in the state. Originally, Dr. Brian Quinlan from Open Cities Health Center in St. Paul was going to testify today, but he's busy seeing patients at this moment. So just a quick introduction to FQHCs. We serve 186,000 low-income folks in the state of Minnesota, 40% uninsured, 40% on Medicaid. In 2009, we provide about 45,000 dental services to 45,000 dental patients. So my purpose today is oppose briefly here the provisions of Senate File 1201 that modify the advanced dental therapist scope of practice. These changes run counter to expanding access to dental services for Minnesota's low-income population. The ADT is an extremely important tool that our FQHCs are interested in for expanding access for the ever-increasing demand for our dental services. To illustrate this demand, I think we just kind of spoke to this conversation a little bit. A couple of our health centers in greater Minnesota have waiting lists in excess of 300 people waiting for access to dental care at the FQHC. One of these health centers is reporting that there are folks driving from Blaine, Minnesota, up to Floodwood, Minnesota, which is 150 miles one way, just to access dental services. So it's a 300-mile round trip for those folks. So without a doubt, waiting lists in excess of 300 people demonstrates the lack of access for dental care for low-income Minnesotans. Moreover, some of these folks that are on waiting lists may actually go to emergency room as they necessitate some sort of care, and that is clearly not the most cost-effective or clinically appropriate place to receive dental care services. So as you know, this is not just a rural phenomenon. It is also an urban phenomenon as well. One of our FQHCs in St. Paul is looking to expand their dental services, and they surveyed 36 dental practices within a 10-mile radius of their health center, and only four were willing to take uninsured or Medicaid patients, and two of those four were other FQHCs. So clearly, access to dental services is deplorable in the state. The ADT is very consistent with the community health center model, the FQHCs. Our members meet our patients' needs by using mid-level providers on the medical and mental health along the dental front as well. Our patients face a lot of complex health and dental issues, so by effectively employing mid-levels, this allows the dentists and the physicians to concentrate on the truly complex cases that need the most attention. Three of our members have indicated they are willing to hire these ADTs as soon as they graduate in June, and they're going to aggressively pursue these folks as they come out of schooling. One particular clinic, a community health center enrolled in southern Minnesota, is looking to establish a mobile van, and they would equip this van for dental services with an ADT. It would be a very effective way to serve a 10 to 12 county area in that area from the community health center. So if Senate File 1201 passes, the FQHC interest in hiring ADTs diminishes significantly. Consequently, the ability to expand health dental services to our low-income Minnesotans diminishes as well. Thank you for your time today, and I can stand for questions at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Watson. Any questions for Mr. Watson? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Christy Fogarty, please.
Good
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chrissy Jo Fogarty. I am also a licensed hygienist, and I am in the first cohort, about to graduate here, of seven students from Metropolitan State University. That is the only program that has the advanced dental therapy program in the state currently. So just so there's not clarification or misunderstanding between the two programs, dental therapy and advanced dental therapy, it's currently the only one. So when you talk about whether or not it's going to affect how we can practice and where we can practice, it absolutely will. And we are set to graduate in June and begin practice as the first dental therapist in the state of Minnesota in July. A couple of my cohorts are here with me today. Some are still working on patients in clinics, so they were not all able to make it. So I'm here representing them. And 2 years ago, we all took a huge leap of faith, and we started in a program. All of us have families, and we knew that it was going to be challenging. We knew that it was going to have strong academic rigors. We knew that it was going to be groundbreaking, and we knew that it was going to be controversial. We did this because we have such a strong sense of the need that is out there. A good chunk of our cohort works in public health already. We do have one girl who actually works in Medelia, Minnesota, so she's in greater Minnesota, and she sees people, much that was alluded to by Mr. Watson, who traveled hours to get to their clinic because it's the only opportunity that they have to get dental care. I actually have worked in suburban private practice doing independent contracting for better part of 7 years before settling into a graduate program. So I worked everywhere from Owatonna to Maple Grove, and I can tell you, we know about the urban, we know about the greater Minnesota, but I've seen it in the suburbs too. It's everywhere. That need is unmet in every area. And I know that Dr. Sled tried to make it sound as if palliative care would be something that would be very accessible with the ADT, with the changes in the legislation, but I can tell you this is exactly what would happen. If I were to be an advanced dental therapist going into a school-based program and I saw a child who had an infection in their tooth, I would have to tell that child, you need to find a way to get to a dentist for a comprehensive exam before I can remove your infected tooth and get you out of pain. That's what we're looking at. And we're looking at greater Minnesota clinics that sometimes have people traveling 2 hours to get there. So now you're telling this parent, this person is educated to the level of a dentist for their scope of practice. They've had experience doing it, but now you need to wait, leave your child in pain with an infected tooth until you can find time to take a day off work and drive 2 hours to have an examination done by a dentist to tell them the exact same thing, that the tooth needs to come out. I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Fogarty. That was very well said. And for somebody that is from Greater Minnesota, I totally understand, and I'm very excited about those mobile units. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name. Are you testifying also?
Yes, I'm Jane Sternahaus. I'm full-time faculty with Metropolitan State in the Advanced Dental Therapy Program. I'm going to keep this real short, but I agree with a lot of the things that have been said by Mr. Watson, Ms. Hazen, and also Christy here. We have been running a clinic at Normandale since the students started actually doing clinical rotations. We have surpassed our 1,000th patient visit since July, and of the patients we have seen, 100% are uninsured. And these students have done multiple procedures. They have been competency tested in a lot of the procedures, doing oral assessments, evaluations. And I just want to also state for the record that if we needed to have a dentist evaluate all these patients, I mean, obviously they are being evaluated by a dentist in our learning program, but once these students graduate in our credentials as advanced dental therapists, it will really slow down the process of patients being able to access care.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Sternhaus. Any questions for either one of the testifiers? Thank you very much.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator St. John.
Is it appropriate for me to ask a question?
Absolutely, Senator St. John.
Madam Chair, this is perhaps to anybody, but on line 327, at least on the document I have, and line 327 and following, and if you just went back to the old language, and as I read it, an advanced practice dental therapist shall not perform any service or procedure described in subdivision 2 and then except as authorized by a collaborating dentist. And it would seem to me that if a collaborating dentist had the responsibility to authorize, then that same dentist has the ultimate responsibility for protecting his or her professional liability. And I think that, in my mind, leads to perhaps somewhat of the crux of the problem. If a dentist has to authorize, then they also, I think, carry some potential, professional liability in doing that. And if they're not directly involved in at least the initial diagnosis and the treatment plan related to that, I don't know how they can put their professional liability at stake.
Senator, Ms. Fogarty.
Madam Chair and Senator Senjum, the one thing that I would point out is collaborative practice agreements are not mandatory. So whoever I have as my advanced dental therapy collaborative dentist is going to be very familiar with my skills, with my ability to assess and determine needs of the patient, and no one is forced to sign this agreement with me. You may be correct. There is probably ultimately some responsibility that lies with that dentist and their professional, their profession. But that's the choice that they're taking on and the trust that they're putting in me. And no one's forcing them to do that. And there are many dentists who are eager to do that, who trust us and have seen our skills and know, I'll repeat it again, for the scope of practice, we have been trained to the level that a dentist has. And I'm going to give you a prime example. Dr. Paul Walker is a member of the Board of Dentistry. Dr. Paul Walker is a pediatric dentist who taught our cohort pediatric dentistry. Dr. Paul Walker also taught the dentist I work for pediatric dentistry. The same rigors, the same expectations, the same demands that he gave his dental students, he gave to us. The comment my dentist said is, well, no one can argue your education is where it needs to be, because it is. That's why these dentists will trust us.
Senator Senjum, I would assume, though, if you took out that language on line 3.0, subdivision 3, the new link, new wordage, you'd also have to take out 4.14, correct? That pretty much guts the bill.
Well, Madam Chair, the intent here was just provide some information. And I appreciate Senator Berglund's comments. We've taken some time here, but I do appreciate this time, and my understanding is that the parties will continue to discuss.
Okay. That's wonderful. I know there is a gentleman. Two more people that would like to testify before we leave. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I think maybe the other testifiers wouldn't object if we laid the bill over. I know everybody who is here about this subject is passionate, but if we're not going to act on the bill today, I don't think they would have their feelings hurt.
I would like to just ask Dr. Jean Sternhaus. Oh, that's you. Okay, Sternhaus. Great. Well, then I think the motion is to lay the bill on the table, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you especially to all the members for taking this time.
Thank you. It's a good discussion. We are going to recess members till a quarter to 3 o'clock. About 10, 15 minutes. Thank you.